TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg. All sports.
Step up and set the tone.
All the time. A division of Bell Media. It's Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on the official home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Y'all ready for this?
Bright and early, good morning, Winnipeg, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock. And Ezra Ginsberg.
Good morning, everybody. Drew, it's great to be here. 7 o'clock in the morning. Good morning. Bright and early. You got to wake up early.
Profound.
I actually just fell asleep. I'm here, but I just fell asleep.
Congratulations, Ezzy. It is an honor that we will write a check to the Pass It Forward hockey equipment program that you're here this early this Saturday morning.
Maybe I'll write the check to make sure it doesn't bounce, but no, it's good to be here. I had to be here. I missed 2 shows earlier this year. And I want to thank all the people that supported me, but it's awesome. You know, if anything...
You can name them.
If anything, I woke up early for all the fans of Illegal Curve that are listening right now and everybody that supported me.
My mom says Ezra rocks.
Thank you. You know, waking up early, we were talking to Chris off-air, who's producing for us today. Chris wakes up at 3:30 in the morning, so to wake up at 6 in the morning seems nothing in comparison. So, no, it's great to be here, and it's important to be here because we have a huge game. The Jets are finally in a playoff spot after a while, since the first time since December, but it's not really a big issue. I just had to go to bed at 10:30. No big deal.
No big deal, yeah. Normal 10:30. Yeah. I mean, you're
NBD.
Yeah, and the NBD, no, exactly. Jam-packed show ahead for you this Saturday morning. Coming up in about 1 hour's time, we're going to do a segment about the St. John's Ice Caps. You know, we're going to go down on the farm, see how the AHL team is doing. Robin Short from the St. John's Telegram is going to be joining us. We're thrilled to welcome Robin back to the program. That'll come up at 8 o'clock. At 8:30, Aaron Portsline from the Columbus Dispatch is going to be joining us. You know, they've already traded Jeff Carter. Are they going to trade Rick Nash? We'll see. We'll talk to Aaron from the Columbus Dispatch. And at 9 o'clock from the St. Louis Post-Gazette, Jeremy Rutherford is going to join us. Preview today's Jets-Blues game. All that good stuff. Big show for you, as usual, here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. Let's look back last night in the NHL before we get really deep into today's show. Start with the game that mattered most to Winnipeg Jet fans. That took place in the American nation's capital, where the Washington Capitals defeated the Montreal Canadiens by a 4-1 score. Is it emblematic of a team that's going to start turning things around, or just a team facing a weakened opponent?
That's a good question, Drew. From what I saw of the game, and I only caught basically the third period, I thought it was a little bit more of the latter than the former. The Washington Capitals still look like a very flawed team to me. Defensively, they just don't look complete. Offensively, they don't control the puck enough. Overall, I wasn't overly impressed. Haven't been overly impressed with this team all year, so I'd have to say that I think it's more mirage.
Is he?
Right, and the thing is, Washington does have a couple of games in hand on the Jets, but they defeated the Montreal Canadiens, who are obviously out of the playoff race and who are, by all counts, sellers. As far as who else will move remains to be seen, but Washington is in a similar position to the Jets, that they were coming from behind, but everyone expected the Capitals to win the division, ourselves included. In fact, I think we believed that they would win the entire conference. Boy, were we wrong about that one, because they've been the biggest underachievers of the year. But as far as the Washington Capitals go, what they do at the trade deadline to me is one of the most interesting things, because there's a few teams out there, and you could put the LA Kings in that position, where they think that they're one player or two maybe away from putting themselves over the top, getting into the playoffs and making a run. But the problem with the Washington Capitals is if they go on a run, at best they'll win the division and still face a tough opponent, whether it's the New Jersey Devils or the Ottawa Senators, and they've got huge issues.
Or Philly.
Or Philly, and they've got huge issues in net. Volkoon hasn't been as good as they want, and it's going to be tough for them. They have to make a move, I think, to get into the playoffs. If you don't get into the playoffs, it's a huge failure. But I think it's going to be a failure anyways, because I think what they have now is not what as good as they thought they were. I don't think that they're there. I think that Ovechkin hasn't been there all night, even though he had a good game yesterday. But it's going to be tough for them.
Think about it. Think about how bad the Lightning have been, and are they not first in the division now?
The Lightning?
Sorry, I mean the Capitals, excuse me.
Well, they're a point behind first in the division.
They're a point behind first in the division, and they've played awful hockey.
Yeah.
And we have to also mention the fact that Mike Green, who is of vital importance to their success, and they had a stat last night showing that the team's success is significantly greater with him in the lineup. And there's no doubt about that. I mean, if you're going to be a puck possession team, if you're going to be a speed team, moving the puck from your own zone is extremely important, and especially on the power play. And the puck goes through him. So I think we shouldn't understate that. And also Nicholas Backstrom being up. For all the flaws this team has, and I think matched up against the better teams in the National Hockey League, they just don't have enough. They're still the best team in this just awful Southeast Division. Southeast Division is as bad a division as I've seen in a long time. I don't mean that to break the heart of Jets fans. That's just a point of fact. I mean,
it's worked out well for Jets.
Yeah,
exactly.
Jets fans, apologize for
what we said, Drew, during the up in the press box during the last game, is the Jets should be thanking God that they're not going to be realignment next year, because the teams they're in this division with are brutal. Florida's going into the tank like we suspected. Washington's a flawed team. Tampa Bay is tanking to get a high draft pick. I mean, they'll be better next year, but they're still going to lack that depth that you need to, make a long run. And Carolina's a rebuilding team. And so when you look at it that way, I mean, the Jets have this division here for the taking.
Yeah.
I mean, Washington now is 2 points behind them, but has 2 games in hand. So,
the games in hand are important, but there's been no evidence that they're necessarily going to, win all those games. Same with Florida, especially, given, Florida's, four, 5-1 record in the last 10. Washington's 3-6-1 in the last 10.
Momentum is on the Jets' side.
Absolutely. The division's there for the taking.
Out of those teams, they're playing better than anybody.
It boggles my mind to say it, but the division is there for the Jets' taking.
I don't agree.
You still think
of the games in hand. Yeah.
Well, we'll see if the Jets.
Well, it might be there for the taking, but obviously Florida, in a sense, is going to have to give them something, because the Jets and Florida play twice more.
Well, Thursday.
Thursday, exactly. And with 4 games in hand, it's one thing if it's 2 games in hand, but the Jets are essentially still going to have to win 75% of their games.
That's right.
And Florida's going to have to lose, go on a little bit of a losing streak. So it might be there for the taking, but, Florida's going to have to throw them a bone, so to speak.
I agree with you there.
Also, guys, should we also mention, we'll talk about this later, but just one point before we go to the next game, Drew. Andrei Pavlich is getting, arguably overplayed.
Well, and I would agree with that. I would agree with that, and that's why I expect to see Chris Mason today.
Yes, I would
not
agree.
Not confirmed yet.
Confirmed, but that's the chatter.
I would agree. Former team, he played on St. Louis for a period of time.
Yeah,
Drew, I would get him in there, because if you're going to be coming down to the last couple of games, which I like almost assuredly will, you need to have somewhat fresh Andrei Pavlich.
Right, and if you're able to give him Friday, Saturday, Sunday off, play him Thursday against Tampa, play him Monday against the Oilers, and if you're able to give him Thursday, Friday, Saturday off, then, or you play him tonight.
And you give him off.
And you give him Monday off, and that gives him Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. That gives him 4 days off.
That's not bad. I think I actually prefer that.
I mean, so that'll be interesting.
Could you get him rested into the Florida game?
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see what they decide. I sort of expect it'll be Chris Mason today. If it's not today, then I would say assuredly it's going to be Chris Mason on Monday against the Oilers. Last night in New Jersey, the Vancouver Canucks really could have mailed it in. They had every excuse in the book. They didn't arrive in Jersey till something like 4 a.m. on the second half of a back-to-back. They defeated the New Jersey Devils 2-1. Vancouver the best team in the NHL right now?
Yeah, I think that, them and Detroit, I know they went in and beat Detroit. It's in a shootout. I don't give it that too much weight.
And no Datsyuk for Detroit.
No Datsyuk. So, I think those are the two best teams in the league right now. Vancouver's a well-oiled machine, though. Still think they need a right-side defenseman, but, we're picking out a small weakness on a well-oiled machine. They skate extremely well. Their puck movement's great. Their special teams is great. Luongo looked great recently. There are few flaws on this squad, so it's a matter of staying focused and keeping this momentum.
Yeah, if they're not the best team in the league, they're one of the best. Definitely top five, top three. But the Devil, I actually watched this game out of all the games, I watched this game the most, and the Devils made a little bit of a push and actually outshot them quite bad. And then we're going to get into this later. The Zidlicky trade broke, and it almost seemed like that was the biggest news of the night, and they were kind of already looking forward. But the Canucks are when they can go into New Jersey and not play very well and still come out with the points, that's pretty impressive. But you know, the Devils have been one of the hotter teams in the East, and you know, it was a good game. This wasn't the most exciting game, but it was one of those games where Vancouver, I thought, stole the game because the Devils were pushing in the third period. But you know, the Canucks are going to be tough to beat. I mean, someone's going to have to knock them off, and if it's not Chicago or Detroit, I don't think it's going to be anybody.
Two games that went to shootouts last night. The Islanders defeated the Rangers 4-3 in a shootout, and the Sabres defeated the Bruins 2-1 in a shootout.
I mean, the craziest part about the Sabres having their awful season, they're 5 points out of the playoffs.
Sure. I mean, it's hard. Yeah. I mean, and that's it in the East. Nobody's out of it in the East. I mean,
out of all the teams, nobody wants to play their number one because they have the talent.
If they get going. Yeah. They're 6-3-1 in the last 10.
Yeah, they are. No, they have gotten going. So, I mean, if they can go on a run here, and this is a team that can go on, I think, a long run just because of the goaltending factor and the talent factor. That's when nobody wants to play. You don't want to finish first in the division and have to play, the first in the conference and have to play Buffalo in the first round.
No argument for me in that case. You'd much rather take Tyler Florida Ennis back, or a Winnipeg or a Toronto or a Washington.
Yeah. Tyler Ennis, by the way, is a huge addition back. And we haven't talked enough about his absence because a smaller player, extremely good skater, very creative offensively. His absence was overlooked by many, I think, and shouldn't have been because he is a key cog in their offensive production.
Two other games last night. The Colorado Avalanche defeated the Columbus Blue Jackets 5-0.
That game was tough to watch.
I don't know why you would watch any of it.
Tough to watch.
And the Dallas Stars defeated the Minnesota Wild 4-1 last night. Both Dallas is now in eighth spot in the West. Colorado is just 2 points behind them. So both of those teams are on the fringes of the Western playoff race. Although Dallas really does have San Jose still in their sights potentially. 3 points behind San Jose. Granted, San Jose has 3 games in hand in the Pacific Division.
Yeah, Steve Downey picked up a goal yesterday for the Avalanche. And both of these divisions are pretty wide open. And it's going to be fun to watch these races. But, Colley also needs some help from other teams, but Colley against Columbus, that was a game they had to win, and they won it quite easily, actually. They scare me a little bit. They've got one of the youngest teams in the league and lots of firepower. Landeskog is
he's a stud.
Pretty good player.
Well, he was the only guy who really made an impression on us when we saw Colorado last, was that last Sunday?
That was last Sunday, yes.
Yeah. How time flies when you're having fun. Let's leave it there and go to break. When we come back, we're going to start breaking down the week in trades in the NHL. He's Richard Pollock. He's the On Time Ezra Ginsberg. I'm Drew Mandel. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Seven 18 in the morning, Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by the Cheer Bar and Grill, located in the heart of Osborne Village at Stradbrook and Osborne. Catch all of the home team's games on their numerous HD big screens. Be sure to join Illegal Curve Hockey at their home away from home, the Cheer Bar and Grill.
We're going to be there tonight for Richie's cousin's birthday.
We are?
You're not invited, Drew.
Oh. Which cousin?
RM.
Oh.
Dave's sister.
Ezzy, I think today might be the night you can finally start, maybe the two of you, a little bit of dating action now that you're up all nice and early.
This is awkward, Drew. Move on.
It's been in the works for a while now.
What, me and Dave?
Well, yeah, that too, to be honest.
That much we know.
Yeah, that much it wouldn't surprise anybody. But, this might be your way in. You've wanted to become a member of the Pollock family for so long.
No, I'm already a member of the Pollock family. It's the Manuk family. Richie and I are distant cousins.
Cancel the show.
My grandmother was a Pollock.
It's true. I suppose you guys are.
My mother was a mother.
Your mother was a mother. All righty, let's talk trades. What about that? With the trade deadline Monday
Well, Drew, I hope we have trades to talk about on Monday.
Because we're on from noon until 4?
Yeah.
Yeah. So trade deadline day, Monday, February 27th here on TSN 1290. All day coverage gets underway at 6 a.m. Richie and I join the festivities at noon. Hustler and Lawless after that. And, of course, it's Winnipeg Jets game day, so there's a lot going on that day. Let's start with the biggest of the deals in the past week. That's Jeff Carter going from the Columbus Blue Jackets to the Los Angeles Kings. In return, Jack Johnson and a conditional first-round pick,
yeah.
Either 2012 or 2013 is the condition. Besides Mike Richards, let's just analyze this trade. Mike, how happy would Mike Richards be? Is this the answer the Kings are looking for?
This is a really complex trade to me, Drew, because it has obviously short-term and long-term ramifications. And you know, I like the way I thought of it a little bit, like Derek DeHatch did in his notes segment, his notes article this week on the Globe, saying, first off, from a Columbus perspective, you know, basically what you're doing is you're trading Jakub Voracek and the 8th overall selection,
Sean Couturier,
for a first round pick in Jack Johnson. And the question really is, can the first round pick offset or be close enough in value in that? Would you trade Voracek? You know, would Columbus have traded Voracek for Johnson straight up in the offseason? Probably. They almost assuredly would have, because they needed a young defenseman, right?
Yeah.
So in that way, you know, there's some way you can reconcile, you know, this whole Jeff Carter experiment. Now, should you have known he wasn't going to be happy to go? Should you have done your homework? Probably. Is a lot of this on Jeff Carter? Absolutely. I mean, Jeff Carter pouted his way out of Columbus. You know, for a guy who's making millions and millions and millions of dollars, he was anything but professional. And somebody said, one of the players, anonymous players, said, you know, he was on his way out as soon as he got here. And I think he needs to be held responsible for that. So, I mean, from Columbus' perspective, they've certainly haven't helped themselves with the contracts they've signed, and we'll talk about other trades that they've made and are going to make over the course of the show. But I think overall, they didn't, and I don't love Jack Johnson, and I don't love Jeff Carter, although I like Carter a little bit better than I like Johnson. But I think overall, they didn't do as badly as maybe thought they would have, because really there was no market for him. The Jeff Carter market, as he was restricted by the fact that he has 10 years left on his deal, and was restricted by the fact that some people, well, that really restricted it to a couple teams. And then some people were concerned about his character. So the market for him was very, very, very small. The fact that they were able to get that first-round pick, now it's probably going to be in the 15 to 20 range, but the fact they were able to get that first-round pick, the fact they were able to get Jack Johnson, whose game I have concerns about, but does have potential, I thought was fine work by Scott Housen on an evaluation of just this contract, just this trade.
Right. The fact, I mean, if you look at it strictly on the vacuum of this deal, he did okay. If you look at it on the overall about actually how what they have to give up to acquire Jeff Carter to begin with,
you're not going
to
do it, probably.
No, less of a good job by Scott Housen.
Now, if they
can
nail that draft pick, then they can kind of make it look like it was a fine deal.
Yeah,
and Jakub Voracek is kind of, you know, a second line right winger and a good player. I like him. I'm one of his fans. But if you can get Jack Johnson for him and eat up those minutes, and you can make good on the draft pick, then you could be okay. And Ezzy, just quickly about the talent, about, you know, breaking down the talent of each player. Jeff Carter is a good skater. He's a good stick handler. He's got a terrific shot. He can distribute the puck, but he's not great at it. He's good defensively. He can play in all situations. He's an all-around really, really good player.
He's also, is he a regular 30-goal scorer in the NHL?
Yeah, he's a regular 30-goal scorer.
And that doesn't come easily.
You know, Rated Ferraro said in this station, you prefer him to be a wing, and he's going to play wing to start off with. I don't mind him at center, because he can win some draws, and he is good defensively. But he can play wing as well, and he's a one-shoot shooter, meaning his shot's so good, he can score from basically anywhere. So Carter, now the problem is you have a 10-year deal, and it's just, you know, it's only going to cover a portion of his prime, if that at all, and then you're getting over in the older years. Now, he doesn't play a wear-and-tear game, so I think he could, you know, his longevity is probably better than a guy like Mike Richards. In terms of Johnson, as he skates, he's as good of a skater as a guy like Zach Bogosian, just natural skater. Good slap shot, good offensive talent, can join the rush. His hockey sense at times, especially in defensive awareness, leaves a lot much to be desired. And so I wonder how he'll fit in, especially in a team like Columbus, who's, you know, kind of all over the place. It will
he
be
didn't
interesting.
Sound unhappy about going
well,
to Columbus.
He's a Michigan boy.
Yeah.
He was born in Indianapolis, went to Michigan. So I think, you know, in terms of players, there's talent and upside to both, but there's also downside to both.
Yeah, Richie, and earlier you said this is a complex deal, and I agree with that, and I think that Jeff Carter, I mean, that was a huge, there was two huge moves that the Columbus Blue Jackets made, signing Wisniewski and then trading for Carter, and both of them have been unmitigated failures, and as far as I'm concerned, this is a trade that is made out of desperation for the LA Kings. let's be honest, the LA Kings were the only team that was going to get Jeff Carter, and they wanted him there. They've already got Mike Richards there, his good friend from the days in Philly and back in the days of playing junior hockey. And you've got John Stevens there, which you mentioned, Eric Duhacek also mentioned in his article, mm-hmm. which is a bit of a Philadelphia reunion. But yeah. LA hasn't been scoring goals this year. They had to make this move. This was a year.
But let me ask you this. Let me get in there, because that's what I wanted to ask, Ezzy. If you can't score goals in year one, you know, in 2011-12, should you be taking on a 10-year deal to address a need like that?
Well,
I think Jeff Carter will help dramatically in that factor. I mean, the guy scores goals. He's a goal scorer in the NHL, and that's what LA doesn't have. And putting him back with a Mike Richards, where there's obviously a ridiculous comfort level between the two. You know, I think for LA, I think it's a risk, certainly. But is it a calculated risk? Yeah. And I mean, look, it's Jack Johnson had a 7-year contract.
If you have that, I know, but you have to understand that Jack Johnson is younger than Carter.
I know that.
And defensemen generally peak a little bit later than forwards.
I know that too. I just think it's worth the risk, given how else were they going to find offense?
Well, I mean, don't get me wrong, I like Jeff Carter as a player, but how else were they going to find offense?
Even if they wrote off the rest of this season, how else were they going to find offense, say, on the free agent market, and what was it going to cost them on the free agent market?
Well, that's a good question, Drew. But, I mean, if you're willing to trade a guy like Jack Johnson, clearly there's ways to find offense. I mean, you also have to understand that, you know, the Kings have changed there. Now, I realize that they traded Jack Johnson, but the Kings have affected their cap for the future. And Carter's deal as a cap hit is quite reasonable, right?
Yeah.
But the Kings are spending now close to $7 million for Kopitar, close to $6 million for Richards, and over $5 million for Carter. Three good players. Don't get me wrong. Three really good players.
And look who's coming off the books for them in this offseason.
Penner.
Stoll. So there's another
Drew,
seven.
That makes sense, but then let me ask you this.
Yeah.
You got Brown and Gagne. Brown in a reasonable deal. I mean, sorry, Williams and Brown. With Gagne next year. Okay, I understand that. But, you know, who's playing second, third, and fourth line? I mean, Williams and Brown can contribute. Gagne, if he's healthy, can contribute. But your offensive depth isn't great.
And that you can deal with in the offseason. A lot easier than you can getting a 30-35 goal scorer like Jeff Carter.
And your young defense. I mean, you know, your young defensemen on LA have to finally develop. Meaning,
yeah.
You have to use guys like Voinov and Martinez. Obviously, they'd like for guys like Thomas Hickey to be improved and all that stuff. So, in the system, they've drafted well with defense, or they drafted a lot of defensemen, excuse me. But they're going to have to pay Jonathan Quick into. I mean, it just throws things for a little bit of a loop. I think overall, I really not in favor of this deal either. I don't have a. I'm not picking a side as a winner.
Richie, getting back to the actual trade here itself, and even though we are obviously talking about the trade, but the LA Kings now have Jeff Carter and Mike Richards for a decade, and you know that is really what it boils down to. And I don't think people are going to say that. Yeah, there is a risk and a reward, I guess, when you're dealing with contracts and players this well. These are players this big. These are very good players, and I think that the trade itself, trading Jack Johnson, and he is a very good defenseman, and he might be a little bit overrated because he was drafted so high, but you're giving a first round pick, and it is conditional, but it's a first round pick. A first round pick is very valuable.
The condition is either that it's a first round pick this year or next
lottery year. Protected.
So
this year.
It's definitely a first round pick.
Ezzy Johnson makes $4.3 million a year, which isn't that high, especially for our defenseman. And also taking into account, I mean, let's talk about this. Carter and Richards were exiled from Philly.
It's the elephant in the room.
Let's talk about that.
It's the elephant in the room.
The Philly that loves hard-nosed Canadian boy players, loves guys that play the game, took him to the Stanley Cup final, Olympian.
Which won. Mike Richards is the quintessential guy, but he fell out of favor in the locker room.
Well, they drank their way out of Philadelphia. They drank and partied their way out of Philadelphia. I mean, let's call a spade a spade. You've heard it on this program for over 2 years now. How it was over 2 years ago that Anthony Sanfilippo from the Delaware County Daily Times came on the show and said there's a rift in that dressing room because Carter and Richards party and drink too much. I don't see that changing. I mean, well, the question is,
LA isn't a party city.
Well, I mean, but have they matured since then?
Well, I mean, that is, and I not the million-dollar question, the $60 million question.
Well, sure, given the length of the contract and everything else. That's the question. Are these guys, or are they, I mean, look, even when they were drinking and partying in Philly, they were still successful on the ice.
Ezzie, Dustin Brown was apparently on the wire, available at least for a period of time. Why is that?
They want this. They're going to turn this team into Mike Richards' team.
Not even turning it. It's once you have Richards in the room and Carter in the room, it changes. Like, if you've been in the locker room before and different guys come in, it changes the leadership dynamic.
Yeah.
And it's not Brown's team anymore. Maybe that's a good thing. Maybe it's not. But you're changing that. And so that, and maybe, you know, Hatch talked about the locker room being stale, according to Daryl Sutter. Maybe so. But does this change? I mean, again, you're changing stale by taking on a 10-year deal. I don't mind Jeff Carter as a player. I actually kind of prefer him to Jack Johnson. I just, for both teams, I thought they could have addressed their needs in different ways.
The question, I mean, it's a risk, but it's
there's a better chance for payoff for LA, though.
Are they, and are Carter and Richards, I mean, I'm sure, you know, have they matured from their Philly days? Are they, let's say, more professional?
Are they going to be toxic?
Well, nobody said they were toxic. Nobody had any complaints about that dressing room until Chris Pronger showed up with them, and then that was a toxic mix. Probably because Pronger's all about the game. That's all he ever cares about. And so when he sees these other guys who are the leaders of the team, quote-unquote, out doing things that Pronger wouldn't do.
And what about Jeff Carter? I mean, he didn't act professionally in Columbus.
Well, there's a good question. I mean, you know, Is he willing to sulk his way out of different situations?
Did he poison that locker room?
Well, I mean, I don't
know
that they...
Rick Nash didn't demand. I know it's been a lot of years, but Rick Nash wasn't demanding out before that.
I don't know that they necessarily poisoned the dressing room in Philadelphia so much as they had a culture clash with Pronger, and the Flyers management decided to side with Pronger and his experience and his success over Carter and Richards.
Also, guys like Claude Giroux and Daniel Briere.
They can. When you have that sort of as your backup, it's an easier decision to make. And, you know, Voracek looked like a very good player when we saw him on Tuesday night.
Yeah, of course.
So, I mean, you know, Philly was dealing from a position of strength. It'll be interesting to see how it affects the L.A. dressing room.
And L.A. is dealing from a position of desperation. And that's what I'm saying. A desperate move with a 10-year ramifications has its inherent risks.
Well, and if Dean Lombardi's out of job within the next 10 years, you'll know why.
It's an interesting predicament that they have there. And as much as we want to say the young defenseman now will address, we also have to address the fact that they might need to trade a forward for a defenseman, thereby weakening their offense again.
Well, we'll see that.
And Mike Richards has been brutal this year, right?
Yeah, he has been. I mean, who knows? Maybe he misses his buddy Jeff Carter. We'll bounce to find out.
That's a lot of money for a guy, and I like Mike Richards' game, but if it's that's the reason, so that's a lot of money for a guy who needs to have somebody else making a lot of money to Purdue for him.
No doubt. Let's go to break. When we come back, more trades. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
Welcome back. You know what, Drew? We need some banana pancakes in here.
Is that Jack Johnson play?
Like the song by Jack Johnson?
Jack Johnson.
Okay.
Can we play that next break, Chris?
Because he was traded.
Great song. Banana pancakes.
Yeah, no, I understood why.
Hey, Drew, we can play more wrestling theme songs if you want.
No, yeah, we should.
Well, you know whose theme song we introduced you to?
That was Ric Flair.
No.
Oh, Mr. Perfect.
No.
Who was it?
Macho Man.
Macho Man.
And it fits because you are, of course. No,
I'm a macho man.
I'm not even going there.
Macho. I'm a nacho
man.
Macho
man.
I'm not a macho man. I'm a nacho man.
Yeah, that's very true. Anyway, Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day here on TSN 1290. Jets Blues gets underway at 1:00 this afternoon. Dennis Bayak, Brian Munns, and Shane Knighty with the call. Rick Ralph in the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show at 12. Hustler and Lawless follow us. Also worth noting, Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day on Santa Lucia Pizza Game Days. Proceeds from every pizza sold will go to support Pass It Forward, the same hockey equipment program that we're going to be making our donation to because you showed up on time, Ezzy. So Pass It Forward is going to get it from two sides today. So obviously they're celebrating and kids throughout Winnipeg who can't afford to get the equipment necessary to play the game, they're celebrating alongside. So if you're going to order a pizza today, Santa Lucia Pizza is a great spot to order it from. Let's continue breaking down the weekend trades in the NHL. Another deal that Columbus made, Antoine Vermette goes to Phoenix in exchange for a second-round pick in 2012, a fifth-round pick in 2013, that's conditional, and goaltender Curtis McElhaney.
Should we talk about I feel like Gary Bettman sitting there, like, you know, like an Inspector Gadget. What was the guy's name?
Dr. Claw.
Dr. Claw sitting there being like, we need to take the pressure off Columbus's finances, and we need to take it off from, and we'll take it with our Phoenix organization instead of the master plan, trying to make sure nobody goes bankrupt. That aside...
Actually, I'd like to hear more of your Dr. Claw impersonation, personally.
Well, you know, I mean, does anybody here not think Columbus is losing millions and millions of dollars and Coyotes taking on a contract is kind of odd? I mean, can we mention that?
We can mention it.
Why are they taking on a contract? They're owned by the NHL. I mean,
well,
do they sell a contract? They just sold draft picks. I mean, who's paying for that? The whole NHL?
Yeah.
Are they having the residents of Glendale writing debt checks? In any event, you know, on the ice, Drew, I think Phoenix does well here. I actually think both teams do well here because if you're Columbus, you're getting rid of that contract. And Antoine Vermette is a limited player in terms of offensive skill. He skates well, he can stick out a bit. He doesn't have the best offensive skills overall, though. And he's better defensively than he is offensively. And for $3.75 million a year, you want to be able to get some kind of offensive production from him. So to me, it was a bad contract that, of course...
They shouldn't have given him that much money to begin with. That's what you mean by bad.
And not only that, but it's 3.75 for the next 3 years after this season. So you're getting rid of that contract for a guy who's not going to provide you with a ton of offense. You get a second-round pick. You get a fifth-round pick. McElhenney's whatever. Fifth-round picks are fairly useless. And then the second-round pick has value. Now you have that, but I think more so the value is getting him off your cap. Right, because you have other guys' offensive roles or should be, whether it be Broussard, whether it be Umberger, whether it be other guys that they're going to be getting via trade for Nash or whoever it may be. Right now, from a Phoenix perspective, this is exactly the Phoenix type of guy. I mean, you watch Phoenix play; they're the most boring team in the National Hockey League. When you talk about their success, all you want, sure, if you load up on veterans who want to buy into a trap system and you know and play it really well, they'll cap out at a first round exit every year and they'll make the playoffs and it'll be a success. I mean, that's not how I judge success, but that seems to be how they do there. He fits the mold. He can play defensively as his speed can create pressure on the opposing team. He can add a little bit of offense. He can play in all situations. He's a tweener second, third line guy, but on that team he can play more, you know, a bigger role. And he fits the veteran defensively responsible mold that Dave Tippett wants.
Yeah, I think it's a good trade. I mean, you're essentially, McElhinney is a throw-in. He's been a backup. He's been injured all year, and he's been a backup. Everyone will remember him from his days in Calgary, backing up Kipper.
He's certainly not the answer for Columbus's problem in was thinking.
Not at all, and that's something they will have to address because Steve Mason has struggled big time. It's a good move for Phoenix. Phoenix is on the bubble of a playoff spot right now. They're in seventh. They've got Dallas, you know, behind them, but you know, Phoenix is most likely going to make the playoffs this year. Obviously, you know, LA is going to make a push, and we'll see what happens and with the Flames and everything. But yeah, Richie, I mean, Vermette, you know, he was very good for the Senators, got in there really early, and it's a good move. He on a team like the Coyotes, you mentioned he'll provide a little offense, but on a team like the Coyotes, he almost becomes, you know, one of their top three or four scorers. You don't have a lot there. You've got, you know, Ray Whitney and Radim Verbata driving the train right now, and those guys have done very well.
Amazing.
Whitney's doing really well, at his age, and Verbata's, I believe, got the most goals he's ever had in his career, so that's great. But it's a good trade for Phoenix, you know. That is the type of move.
He's the perfect player.
Like you said, Drew, so you're giving up a fifth-round pick? Fine. Okay, maybe that turns into something for Columbus. Maybe it doesn't. Sometimes they do, but... You take the gamble, and you give the second rounder, but for Phoenix, you're going to have him for 3 years. That is a trade a little bit for the long term as well.
Yeah, it works well for both teams. I mean, Columbus wants to get rid of his contract. Phoenix, he fits into the mold of a Phoenix player.
I've always liked Vermette, by the way.
I never have. I thought he's always been overrated.
Oh.
I'm not saying that's bad. I'm just saying I think he's always been a little bit overrated.
We can still be friends, though.
When he was on Ottawa, he looked better than he actually was.
When they put him on second-line center role, I just didn't think that was a role that he was good enough.
To play second-line
center.
No, he's a third-line NHLer. But
I mean, $3.75 million, that's where his contract comes in, is he? And, or, you, I mean, you throw him in flexible spots up front. But in the end of the day, on Phoenix, when you have Damon Lankaus, you know, skating with a cane, you could add a guy like that on there.
And not a Patrick or a Vander.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. When did Radim Verbata get 30 goals this year?
Yeah, he's been great, Drew. And
he's always been good. He's never been maybe...
He's always been a scorer.
He's always been streaky with Carolina
Chicago. His shooting percentage is almost 17% this year.
But so I would think it'd even be crazier considering he's got 30 goals. Yeah. I will also say this. Ray Whitney has been incredible.
Yep.
And, you know, the utmost of professionalism from Ray Whitney, a guy who's not the best skater, but his ability to find open spaces, hit the seams with his passes, his vision on the ice.
And he scored a shootout goal on Thursday night.
Yeah. He's the kind of guy who's
He's their MVP this year. Let's be honest.
He's absolutely their MVP, and his ability to see the game will continue to make him a productive player into, you know, obviously already into his late 30s, because the game doesn't outsmart him. You know, if he doesn't need to, he's never fast.
Right.
So losing a step doesn't really hurt him as much.
He's an intelligent player, and as long as he doesn't lose his intelligence
and going through him on the half boards and the power play and things like that, I mean, he's just a very responsible player, and he takes good care of himself. And the Coyotes are benefiting from that. And him and Verbata have been carrying that team.
One more deal before we go to break. New Jersey finally acquires this trade rumor for 2 weeks.
So glad that we got to this.
How much time we got here? Because I think this needs a little more time.
Okay, so why don't we do a different deal, then we'll come back to this one. So let's do the Florida deal, because Winnipeg Jet fans care about it. Florida acquires Jared Smithson from Nashville in exchange for a sixth-round pick. What does Smithson bring to the Panthers?
You know, he's a fourth-line center.
Yeah.
He's better than John Madden.
We're sorry that you have to hear that. I mean, he just left again.
Well, no, I mean, at this point in his career, this is Madden's last year, or one of his last years. I mean, he's in his late 30s, but you're right. I mean, he's a depth signing. And
he wins draws.
It's a little bit odd. I mean, maybe not odd, but Florida, they didn't give up much, so I guess it's not...
They gave up a sixth-round pick.
Exactly.
They gave up future... I mean, it's the equivalent to giving up future considerations.
You're going to throw him fourth-line center. He's going to, you know, play a responsible defensive game. He's not going to add much in the way of offense. He's going to win some draws. You know, kill some penalties, things like that. He's not going to be... not going to have a significant role there. I mean, if you're getting away guys like that for sixth-round picks, you clearly don't have much place for him. Because in reality, you can hold on to the guy. It's a salary dump too, really.
It makes $800,000 next year as well.
And you think a salary dump, it's $800,000. Well, it's this year and next year, and it's also the fact, Drew, that you're in Nashville and you're going to be buying. So you want to clear as much space as you can, clear a roster spot there too, right? Because you can only have 50 roster players in the whole deal. So there are other factors here. But again, Nashville doesn't give away assets. This is not a team that makes many mistakes. So giving a guy away like Jared Smithson, clearly they don't see him being that valuable to their cause. So I wouldn't overrate the move.
Okay. Well, we'll see Jared Smithson Thursday night at MTS Center as the Panthers and Jets meet for a colossal showdown. As he got some...
Like some colossal banana pancakes?
Well, in fact, I believe he just ordered some banana pancakes, which is really odd because I didn't know that anybody delivered pancakes this early.
I wonder if Jack Johnson, the defenseman, has ever met the singer. Probably.
I'm sure you're probably not the first person to ever think that.
No, I'm just wondering.
Okay.
Seems I'm not saying it's an original thought, Drew. I'm just...
Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll break down some more of the trades from the NHL this week. You're listening to the Pancake House here on TSN 1290. Mama made...
Nice, Chris. I like it.
You like that? Dr. Claw.
When I was in grade 2, I used to wake up every morning, and then early before school, and then at 7 o'clock I'd watch Sports Desk with Brendan Connor.
Yeah.
And then 7:30 to 8 I'd watch Inspector Gadget, and I'd go to school.
Were you a penny guy or a brain guy?
Penny.
Yeah. What do you mean? What does that mean, Drew?
Well, it was Penny and the Brain. They were the ones who actually did the work for Inspector Gadget.
But why would it be between the two, though?
Well, you have to either be on Team Penny or Team Brain.
Remember when SportsCenter was Sports Desk?
I do remember when it was Sports Desk. Anyways, welcome back to the program.
Chris, can we get that old Sports Desk theme music?
I'll see what I can do.
Yeah.
No, TSN has prohibited us from using anything to do with Sports Desk.
It's been banned accordingly. Let's talk about the Marek Zadlicki trade. He finally goes from Minnesota to New Jersey. Going back to Minnesota is quite the haul, I must say.
Let's not confuse.
It's a good haul.
Sorry. Quite the number of people. Maybe not talent-wise, but certainly a lot of roster spots.
I think it's important to note, before you actually break down the trade for everybody, Drew, is important to know that let's evaluate quality over quantity.
Okay, can I at least say who Minnesota acquired first?
Sure.
Thank you. Curtis Foster. Nick Palmieri, Stefan Viu.
Yep.
Viu.
He used to play for Minnesota. Yeah,
for years.
Second round pick in 2012 and a conditional third round pick in 2013.
If they make the conference finals in the next 2 years, right?
Right, something like that. So it's unlikely that that's going to happen.
Richie negotiated the deal.
It seems like the 2012 second round pick might be the most important piece to that deal.
Likely. You know, I think that people need to.
I mean, Curtis Foster is an ex Wild.
As is Voyeux, as we mentioned.
As is Voyeux.
Yep.
Yeah. And so, I mean, you know, Marek Zadlicki, a guy, for Minnesota, I think they did okay with it, given that Marek Zadlicki was not playing for the team. He'd fallen out of favor with Coach Mike Yeo. Everyone knew he was going to be dealt.
People were killing Lamoriello for the deal last night. I have to disagree with that. I think, again, both teams are getting out of this something that they need, right?
Sure.
In Zadlicki, you're getting a guy who's offensively talented, who can skate and move the puck. And if you've watched New Jersey this year, and if they continue to get goaltending, one thing they miss, and as he's watched them as much as anybody, is an offensive defenseman. They have Volchenko, they have Talander, they have guys that can play a defensive Salvador, they have guys who can defensive style, who can block shots, who can hit, who can do everything. They didn't have a guy who could lead the power play and move the puck out of their own zone well enough. He's a great puck mover who is playing in a restricted style in Minnesota, in a team that, like Phoenix, traps the heck out of everybody. He can move the puck. He can shoot the puck. He's good friends with Elias. He's good friends with Sikora. A Czech guy fits into that room. I think that, and he's signed for next year. I know he signed at $4 million, but he's an offensive puck-moving defenseman. These don't grow on trees.
And Lamoriello has liked Zadlicki for a while. You mentioned that he's Czech and he's friends with Sikora and Elias, and you're right, Richie. Again, I think that as far as the trade goes, you know what? Curtis Foster wasn't that bad for the Devils. He's a big body. He chips in offensively. He was getting power play time on the Devils. I didn't mind Curtis Foster, not the fastest guy. And Marek Zadlicki does bring the puck rushing element that they don't have. Adam Larson's injured right now, and I don't think that he's out long term. But I think that he's a few weeks away. We'll maybe try to get an update on that.
I think he's close. But let's talk about their defense now.
Yeah.
Zadlicki, Volchenkov, Talander, Green, Salvador, Larson, Fain. I mean,
Tarmina.
You got some depth now. You have some roles for people to play. And I like their forward group.
We've been
If they get Zajac back, we said it all year. This is a dangerous team. Lou Lamoriello addresses a need. Veju's completely, totally expendable. He's a 13th forward, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Curtis Foster is a 7th defenseman. Expiring contract, okay? Palmieri has a little bit of upside, but his upside is limited.
Mm-hmm.
It's a third line, fourth line limitation on there. Okay,
roster player, but nothing to write home about.
And look at it in the way of Hal Gill. Okay, conditional third round pick. If you make the conference finals, you're fine. You're willing to give that up.
Sure.
Foster and Veju or whatever. They really don't carry much value. So Foster, Veju, third round pick. Take those out. Look at the Hal Gill deal, though. Okay, second round pick, and Blake Jeffrion.
Yeah.
Palmieri and a second round pick.
Similars.
But we should mention that Zadlicki's under
signed next year.
Zadlicki's under contract for one more year. But this was another. It wasn't a desperation move, but it was a move that the Devils made out of a serious need.
They saw a need. That's not that's what the trade deadline's for.
Right.
You see a need, and
that's good when you're making a trade for the sake of a trade. That's not good. But no, Marek Zadlicki is a good defenseman. He doesn't have any goals this year, and he's 35 years old.
That's
so he's probably only got 3 years or 4 years left, maybe tops. But for the Devils, it's a good move. And now the Devils really don't have to make any other moves. They've picked up Ponikarovsky. Like Richie mentioned, they're going to get Zajac back, hopefully sooner rather than later. They're not going to have to make any moves at the deadline. That was their one move. And, you know, let's not get too excited here. I mean, whether the Devils go far in the playoffs is going to depend on goaltending, because offensively they're on fire. I mean, Kovalchuk, Parise, and have been unreal. Eliash has been good all year. Sikora has been all right coming back to the Devils. But hey, they got their man. They identified Zadlicki. We were talking about this 2 weeks ago, so that they maybe threw in one extra player that you could have said they maybe overpaid a little bit. But the way Richie, you know, analyzed it, Veja was not playing for the Devils.
No.
Palmieri wasn't playing for the Devils, and Curtis Foster was expendable in order to get somebody who was more talented offensively. So you throw in a draft pick. It's really a pretty even trade.
Well, you know, we've killed Lou Lamoriello in the last little while over his sort of bungling of the salary cap and some of his
the Anton Volchenkov contract is a bad contract.
Well, some of his questionable decisions, but I think this year, I think he's sort of captured some of the old Lou magic, and he's made rational, reasonable decisions that have not significantly cost his team anything.
I like the move. I don't mind it from both ends.
And you like the Ponikarovsky move when that was made?
I do. I did. I like this move from both sides, but I really do like them addressing a need in New Jersey. And yes, I like that move too. This is what he's evaluated. I mean, this is what he's done. He's evaluated his team. He says, I need depth on the third line for scoring. I add in Ponikarovsky.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I need an offensive defenseman. I add in Zilicki. He's addressing needs. That's all that people in the locker room want, is you to address the needs that are completely and totally apparent to the blood.
Because the guys in the dressing room know what their limitations are.
And guys, the cupboard is a little bit bare in New Jersey as far as prospects go, but...
Well, that's because the prospects are all playing with the big squad.
Well, thank you. Let me finish here.
Okay.
Adam Henrique is in the lineup, and he's been a nice surprise. And Larson's very young, so you've got a future on defense. So you can make that move. So the Devils are looking good going forward. And like I mentioned before, goaltending is going to be huge, as it always is for every team. And there's going to have to be a move made eventually, to because both of those goalies aren't going to be around for more than maybe next season, if that.
Yeah, that's right.
So, I mean, the Devils, talk about a team that just needed one player to put them over the top and go for it. They're going to go for it.
Well,
you got Marty Brodeur in net, you're going to go for it.
And I like that, by the way, because you also know that in the room. It's Marty Brodeur's close to the end of his career.
Yeah.
Make a little bit of a run for him.
And especially, I mean, if they get Zajac back, I mean, that's their trade. That's their big trade deadline acquisition, if they can get Zajac back and healthy. Questions about if that's going to happen this year or not.
There are questions, yeah.
I mean, serious questions, but I mean, you know, because...
And Achilles injury is that's a tough one.
Well, and you don't know what Parise is going to do in the offseason. So you don't know if, I mean, knowing what we know about the Devils organization and their financial limitations right now, it's hard to believe that they're going to be able to afford Zach Parise in the offseason.
I agree.
Is he already in Minnesota?
Yeah, well, maybe, but you never know, because Lou Lamoriello is a crafty guy.
Yeah, I know he's a crafty guy, but I mean, we know that, you know, the team, like, none of us would be surprised to find out the NHL's fronted them some money or anything, given their well-documented financial difficulties. So that'll be interesting. But, you know, go for it. You got nothing to lose. You haven't given up anything really off of your... You haven't raided your farm system or anything.
Congratulations to Doc Emmerich, by the way, too, who was honored yesterday before the game.
They gave him a Cadillac or a Lincoln or something?
Yeah, I'd take it.
Yeah, well, so would I. Of course I would take it. Let's do one last trade before we go to break. Let's do the Pavel Kubina one, because I want to go into the Downey-Quincy first-round pick one afterwards. Pavel Kubina goes from Tampa Bay to Philadelphia. This happened, I believe, last Sunday, just as we got off air, or last Saturday. Yeah. In exchange, Tampa acquires a second-round pick in either 2012 or 2013, a fourth-round pick in 2013, and forward John Kalinske, who's a minor league forward. Yeah. We saw Kubina on Tuesday. What were your impressions of him?
I thought he looked pretty solid for his first game in a Flyers uniform. Again, we talked about his downsides are that lack of speed and I think a little bit of lack of hockey sense. But he moves the puck well. He's big. He's strong. I think overall, Drew, he does give the Flyers a depth. I didn't think he was completely necessary there, but you watch him. He fits quite well. He's a bigger guy. He can be mean. I'm completely fine with that move, and I have to say I'm completely on board. We'll talk about Yzerman, I guess, coming up after the next segment.
Yeah.
But I'm completely on board with Stevie Yzerman. He's running a team how a team's supposed to be run.
Let's leave it there. At BodyBreak753 tweets at Illegal Curve. At Illegal Curve is the new MTN Kids Club. Inspector Gadget theme song on Saturday morning. Beeve and Buckley clips likely being pulled from YouTube right now. He knows us all too well. When we come back, Robin Short from the St. John's Telegram is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jets Blues gets underway at 1 o'clock today, Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day. I'm Drew Mindell. Over there is Richard Pollock. Ezra Ginsberg showed up on time.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Let's welcome back to the program. He's the sports editor of the Telegram in St. John's, Newfoundland. Robin Short. Robin, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning to you guys. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. We were sitting around earlier this week saying, well, we're on really early this morning. We need to get guests who are in the east of us. So we said, let's go to Robin Short. Right. Let's go to Newfoundland. It's the, I think, what is it, 4 o'clock in the afternoon there?
not quite 4 p.m. It's 10:30.
There you go.
In the morning. But, I was up bright and early myself today. My little guy had an 8 a.m. hockey game. So, no problems.
Did they win?
No, they lost. Their playoff hopes took a setback this morning in the Adam House Hockey League. But, hey, you know what? All the kids had fun, and I tell the kids, you guys are 9 years old. Who cares about winning and losing?
That's right.
That's the right attitude. That's undoubtedly the right attitude. I'll tell you who does care about winning and losing, and that's the St. John's Ice Caps. Unfortunately, they've been doing a lot more of the winning rather than the losing so far this season. Before we get into the team specifically, just want to talk about the reception that they've received in St. John's. Has it just been a sort of like it's been in Winnipeg, just a bonus of a year?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Some cynics, I guess you might say, they may suggest that maybe it's just a passing fancy, but I don't think so. There are many similarities, I guess, between St. John's and Winnipeg. Like Winnipeg, St. John's had professional hockey, of course, the Maple Leafs, for 14 seasons. And when the team left in 2005, there was a void there. And the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League came here for 3 seasons. That did not fill it. And I think when the pro game returned, the hockey fans of St. John's, they're determined to ensure that it's here to stay for quite some time. And they've certainly rallied around the team. It's been a sellout nightly at Mile One Center, a quaint little rink that holds about 6,300. You get up around 65, I guess, when you include the luxury suites and what they call party boxes. So the team has been well supported for sure.
Robin, Jets fans are going to know some of the names on the team, like Spencer Mihacek and Paul Postma and Carl Klingberg, some of the guys that have spent a little bit of time up in the NHL this year. But as far as you're concerned, who's the guy that's been really impressing you and impressing fans, and who's really been the MVP on the rock this year?
Well, you'd like to say perhaps mention the name that you have not mentioned, but I wouldn't be telling the truth. Right now, the best player on the Ice Caps right now, far and away, is Paul Postma. This guy has really developed this season. There's been some concern, I guess, over his defensive play. And while he won't be mistaken for Rod Langway just yet, nonetheless, he has improved quite a bit in that facet of the game. But this guy's playing with so much confidence right now. He's anchoring the power play. He's playing a regular shift, of course. Keeper Cambridge is throwing him out there on the penalty kill. He's logging tons of minutes. Big, tall guy. He's 6'3 or 6'4. He still needs to put some meat on the bones. But great skater, big-time shot. He's really developing this year. Carl Klingberg, the rookie, he's quietly having a pretty good season. He's got 31, 32 odd points in 45 games, quietly having a good year. Zach Redmond, speaking of quietly, Redmond arrived at camp, wasn't the highly touted seventh round draft pick. He was very impressive early this season. Now his play has tailed off. Redmond, of course, is an NCAA guy out of Ferris State, and there was some concern about if he could handle the rigors of a professional schedule. And I guess we're seeing it now because his play has tapered off somewhat in the second half of the season. He was a healthy scratch for two games there shortly after Christmas. And as we know, there's a big difference playing 35, 40 games NCAA versus, your 70 of Major Junior. I guess, we're seeing it in Redmond. But to answer your question, Postma by far has been the team's best player this year, I think.
Robin, what about Patrice Cormier? I know he obviously has quote-unquote, I guess, checkered past from his history in the QMJHL, and when he played in training camp here, he seemed to actually perform quite well. In his limited action here, he seems to have at least played a physical game, got in on the forecheck. How has he been overall?
Cormier's been real solid, he's not a guy... I don't think he's going to bring anybody out of their seats, mm-hmm. and he knows that. He's going to be, I think, a real good, solid third-line hockey player. Someone that, you throw out there in the penalty kill and second half of the penalty kill. Someone who gets involved in the corners, mm-hmm. throws his weight around, camps out in front of the net. He understands that, and he's playing that type of game down here. He's quietly having a decent year. He's got 10 goals in almost 40 games. Mm-hmm. I can see him being a National Hockey League player. You'll never see him on the top two lines. He just doesn't have that makeup. But he'll be a good, solid third line hockey player. Someone who's got good size, is a pretty good skater. He's gonna punch in your 15 honest minutes of hockey.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Robin Short of the St. John's Telegram, talking some St. John's Ice Caps. Robin, you go through the team's leading scores and you go and you compare it to, you know, the rest of the AHL, and you got to go about down to the number 47 in the entire league before you find the St. John's Ice Caps leading scorer. That's Spencer Mihacek, of course. Has this been sort of a scoring by committee sort of system for the Ice Caps so far this season?
Well, you know, it's funny you bring up that point, because I only wrote about that this week. The Ice Caps have a new player, Maxime Masonauer. He started the season in Anaheim.
Yeah.
And was involved, of course, in a trade for Roddy Hozafel. And that's what I mentioned to, I was asking Keith McCambridge, the coach. I said, Keith, what can you tell me about this guy? And, you know, he's a good skater, works hard, plays his position well, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, a guy who's just a good, solid hockey player. Gee, I said, you know, isn't that indicative of your team? Because you're absolutely right. I mean, when you look at the top scorers in the league, there's not a nice cap to be found. And I guess, this team, we've been talking about it, I guess, since the start of the year. It's a team that's quite deep, you know, right from numbers 1 to 24. There's nobody who really stands out. You know, a first-place team, and this team is first place in its conference, battling for first overall in the league with Oklahoma City, which is, of course, Edmonton's farm club. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no 80-100-point scorer on this team. They're basically a bunch of guys. And to answer your question, I guess, to cut to the chase, yeah. I mean, it is scoring by committee. On some nights, you got Spencer Mihacek scoring the big goal. On other nights, Jason Jaffrey scoring the big goal. On other nights, Jason King, former Manitoba Moose. Mm-hmm. He's really coming into his own. Was kind of feeling his way around through the first half of the season, having played in Europe the past couple of years. He's playing very well of late. Sean Weller, you know, I guess it is a scoring by committee. Yeah, to answer your question.
Robin, you mentioned some of the former Manitoba Moose, and our producer Chris Reed is known as the Moose guy, so we'd be remiss if we didn't ask you about those Manitoba Moose, because, of course, before we had the Winnipeg Jets, it was the Manitoba Moose. Yep. And you mentioned Jason Jaffrey, you've got Marco Rosa, Sean Weller, Kevin Clark. Two-part question. How have those guys played this year? And really, more kind of an interesting question. Do the St. John's Ice Caps fans know kind of about the history of the Manitoba Moose, and what is the Manitoba Moose's legacy, I guess, been in St. John's?
Well, absolutely, the St. John's fans know about the Manitoba Moose all too well. The very last game in St. John's Maple Leafs history was against the Manitoba Moose in the 04-05 American League playoffs. The Moose knocked out the Maple Leafs in the first round. Marco Rossi, you mentioned Marco Rossi. He's sidelined with a concussion. Hey, mm-hmm. He hasn't played since December the 18th. Yeah, I was. I did a story with Rosa there just last week, and he's still suffering from the typical concussion symptoms. He cannot watch TV, bright lights, gives him headaches. He's not nauseous per se, but the headaches come on quite easily. And you know, Rosa's 30 years old. And he didn't tell me what he's going to do either way, if he's going to try and come back or if he's going to pack it in. But you know, he's 30 years old, so you know he's got some decisions to make. With regards to former Moose, Jason Jaffrey, he's captain, of course, of the Ice Caps, and good solid player, good solid leader. Very quiet in the dressing room. I don't think he's. He's one of these guys, not that I've ever been in the dressing room between periods, but I don't think he's one of these guys to stand up and deliver your Newt Rockne speech or anything like that. But he's a guy who's, you know, quiet, leads by example, good solid player for the Ice Caps. And Mihacek, of course, he's another guy, fairly quiet, does his talking on the ice.
Robin, you mentioned...
Let's play, do we talking, rather.
Excuse me, Robin. You mentioned a trade earlier. Another trade that the Jets, I guess, / Ice Caps have made was acquiring John Negrin from the Abbotsford Heat. Can you talk a little bit about his game? I people I've talked to actually seem to think that he has a little more upside maybe than the player they dished away. You want to give us a little bit of
Negrin, he's I guess to talk about Negrin, it's kind of like it's kind of like talking about the new car you want to buy, but you haven't given it a test drive yet. Negrin, I haven't really seen him play a whole lot. Yeah. He hasn't played a whole lot, to be honest with you.
Yeah, just three
but
games.
I do know that that the organization is fairly high on the guy. By all accounts, he's an offensive defenseman. Although if you look at his numbers, it certainly doesn't. 29 games, he's still looking for his first goal. Mm-hmm. But as any professional front office will tell you, you can never have too many defensemen. And I guess that's shown in Winnipeg. They've played in Winnipeg so far this year 9, 10, I think. When you include guys like Festerlin and Sula, who've been called up, there's been a slew of them. So Negrin, he simply adds more depth to the IceCaps blue line.
Final question here, Robin. In terms of Keith McCambridge, I mean, we know about him from being a part of the coaching staff here with the Moose. Can you talk a little bit about his coaching style and his communication skills, and just overall how he how he takes to coaching?
Very professional, very very professional. McCambridge, he's got the suit and tie on. Of course, all the coaches wear the suit and tie, but what I mean is, he's professional, very serious in what he does. You're not gonna have big chuckles and slapbacks with him or laughing over a joke. He's quite serious, very professional. Certainly has the respect of the Ice Caps players, and I'd have to think that he's on the NHL radar right now. I mean, His team is battling for first place overall in the league, first year. And the thing about McCambridge, he's a freak about being prepared. Hey, from what I can gather, you got to get up pretty early in the morning to get out of McCambridge. If nothing else, he ensures that his team is prepared for its upcoming game. Positively pours over the videotape. And he's a workaholic, and everything that he's doing, I guess, is showing in the standings and in the wins column.
And that's really all where it matters. Robin Short from the St. John's Telegram, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm sure we'll get you back on again as the Ice Caps hopefully make a long playoff run.
Absolutely. Look forward to it. Thanks a million.
Thanks, Robin. Take care.
Robin, thanks a lot.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Robin Short, St. John's Telegram, covers the Ice Cap. He's the sports editor
Drew, sorry to cut you off. It's a great story that they've done really well there. I don't think anyone is expecting them to do this well, and it's pretty awesome to know that there's this pipeline coming to Winnipeg.
It's Winnipeg East is real. I mean, the parallels between the two stories are uncanny. It's Winnipeg East, and it's good to see. And we don't talk much Ice Caps, but great to have Robin on, and I'm sure as they make a run, we'll talk more about them. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Santa Lucia. Pizza game day. Let's go to break. When we come back, more deadline deal activities. Welcome back to the program. A big thank you to Robin Short from the St. John's Telegram for joining us. This segment is brought to you by David Carr of Monopoly Realty. David is a lifelong Winnipegger who brings passion and energy to all of his real estate dealings. Get in touch with David at 230-6129. That's David Carr of Monopoly Realty, 230-6129. You can also follow him on Twitter, at David Carr, WPG.
Saw David at the Tampa Bay Lightning game. He's the official realtor of Illegal Curve.
Richie, did you enjoy the passion and energy he brought to your real estate dealings?
Absolutely. He's great.
There you go.
Knows his stuff. Should be giving him a call.
Richie's in the market.
He is in the market. Yep. He's an active participant in the market.
He's been bidding.
I can buy.
And bidding, looking.
Ezzy, I believe you've staked out a nice a spot to put your tent up. Is that right?
Richie knows that if there's a spot for me in one of his homes, I think you're buying several homes, right?
Yeah, three at once.
Like Richie's going to have...
You and Robney.
Richie's
going to
have
nothing on you.
Richie's going to have like a daytime home and then a home like for after Jets games. And Richie's also going to have just like a summer pad, like a condo, where if Richie wants to go to his condo just for a couple hours just to get away from his other two homes. Richie's all over River Heights, Tuxedo, Waverly West. They're actually building Richie property and developing huge chunks of land just for Richie so he could buy more houses.
I really regret that you're here on time. Really regret that. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com, where Dave Manuk informs me that the Winnipeg Jets morning papers are now posted. So if you're just waking up, you want to catch up on all of your Winnipeg Jets news ahead of the 1 o'clock start time today against the St. Louis Blues, go to IllegalCurve.com and read the Winnipeg Jets morning papers. Still to come on the program, from the Columbus Dispatch, Aaron Portsline is going to join us. And from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, Jeremy Rutherford is going to join us. So an active show still ahead of you. Before we get to Aaron coming up at about 8:30, let's do one last deal that occurred this week. And this was sort of the one of the more interesting deals in that it's the first, it was a sort of a three-way deal in that Steve Downey goes from Tampa Bay to Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
Tampa Bay acquires Kyle Quincy. And then they deal Kyle Quincy to Detroit in exchange for Sebastian Pichet and a 2012 first-round pick.
So apparently
that first-round pick is probably going to be 29th or 30th overall.
Apparently what happened was here is Detroit talked to Colorado about Quincy. They couldn't match up on players. Tampa and Tampa then talked to Colorado about Quincy. They matched up with Downey. And then Tampa... Eiserman told Colorado that he was flipping him to a Western Conference team, but didn't say what team it was. This is Steve Eiserman being entirely creative. Again, Steve Eiserman being a progressive general manager. A, knowing that his team isn't a Stanley Cup contender, so selling, saying the goal is to win the cup, and then getting an asset and getting a really good asset in a first-round pick, into the first round, but a first-round pick for Steve Downey. Steve Eiserman is continuing his ascension all the way to the top of the GM ranks. He has foresight. Yep. He has a willingness to make a move. He has everything you want in a general manager. If I were a fan, I would wish my general manager would have the same willingness to commit to the long-term goal of winning a Stanley Cup.
It's not good enough for Steve Eiserman to, you know, sneak into the eighth playoff spot and lose in four or five games. He wants to build a team that is the Detroit Red Wings, a perennial Cup candidate.
And this is a great move. Because, I mean, maybe if he makes a run for the eighth spot there, so they lose in the first round because they have terrible goaltending. He knows that they're not good enough to make a sustained run through the playoffs.
Right, and he's now got the first rounder, he's got a couple second rounders, and he's got, I believe, two fourth rounders as well.
He's got five picks in the first three
two
rounds.
Five picks, yeah. In addition to their own pick, right?
Well, yeah,
including that pick. And, yeah, he's done a very good job. And, you know, this trade, I think, in a sense, was one of the most interesting ones. Sometimes three-way deals can almost leave one team on the sidelines, but I like the acquisition of Downey because that Colorado Avalanche team was here recently and the Jets beat them 5-1. But even though the Jets have their number, they're a pretty interesting team. I mean, they've got some grit and Downey, you know, is one of those guys. He's almost a triple threat. And he can score and he can also drop the mitts. But he's a gritty guy and I like Downey even though, you know, he has had a checkered past. Talking about guys with suspensions and all that back into his days in junior. But Quincy's a guy that goes to Detroit and he was a guy that was in and out of the lineup when they were, you know, winning the Stanley Cup and then back to back cup years. He was a guy that couldn't really get into the lineup. And there was a reason why he couldn't get into the lineup because the wings have always been stacked on defense. But it's a good move for Detroit as well. I mean, they're going to get a guy who's a bottom pairing defenseman, Richie, on that team and most teams. But it's a good move for him. So I agree that Stevie Y's done a great job. But also, this move is helpful for the Avalanche and Wings because the Wings give up a first round pick. And, you know, that's fine. It'll
the Wings
be a late
give up
pick.
The first-round pick.
It's a late pick.
They get a guy they want, so they're okay giving up that late first-round pick.
And their system's pretty good, guys. We should also mention that their system's good. So with their system depth now replenished after years of not being great, they have the ability to make that first-round pick. In terms of both Quincy and Downey are both pending RFAs, so the team that gets them retains their rights after this year. The first-round pick is obviously the first-round pick. That's self-explanatory. But what about the talent on the ice, quickly?
Yeah.
The talent on the ice. Downey's a guy who will get in your face... Who will go
I
to
love
the net,
those players.
Who will hit, who will move around, you know, he can move around a bit, he can skate a bit, he can do a lot of the things.
He plays on the edge, he sometimes goes over the edge.
Yes, he does, and he doesn't have great hands, but he goes to the net, he can give you 10, maybe 10 to 15 in that range. You know,
he's got 15 already.
Yeah, so 30 to 35 points, but he'll probably a third line right winger ideally. He was playing in higher roles in Tampa with different types of players.
So he's got 13.
Yeah, so but you know, he's a guy who will give a, will, I don't love his game. He's obviously dirty, but he'll change it, will, he will make it harder to play against Colorado. One thing you noticed when they played here, they were not that hard to play against.
Right.
So that's a factor.
Yep.
Now, in terms of Kyle Quincy, he's a guy I've always liked back into when he played with Grand Rapids, in that he skates well, he moves the puck well, he isn't the most physical, he's not a big guy. He isn't the most physical, but he can make the first pass, he's got a pretty good shot, he can play a little power play, he can play a little penalty kill. Ideally, you're bringing him in because you have Lidstrom and White, you have Stewart and Cronwall. So you're playing him on the 5-6 pairing, you're taking pressure off of a guy like Jakob Kindle, you're playing him with a guy like Eriksson, and he's going to move the puck out of your own zone. He's going to get the puck moving in the right direction. He can skate. So he fits the mold of skating and moving the puck. And that's a huge – it's a nice element for Detroit to have. They have a lot, they have completely and totally luxury there of talent at both forward and defense. But he fits into what they're trying to do, and they could also retain him long-term. Remember, when they had him, they lost him on waivers to L.A.
Right.
And the reason they lost him is because the guy he's, I think, playing with now, Jonathan Eriksson, is a guy who kind of passed him on this chart. I actually thought – watching them play in the AHL, that Quincy was as good, if not better, than Eriksson. Now he's not as big, not as long, maybe not as much upside. But overall, he plays a very solid game, and it's a kind of game that Mike Babcock can trust for the most part.
And Kyle Quincy's a guy who, you know, assuming everything stays the same, you know, is likely to be a Detroit Red Wing. He could be a Detroit Red Wing for the next 5, 6, 7 years.
Yep.
You know, and it's just a reasonable deal for all sides in this one. You mentioned, though, the question I have is, you mentioned that Detroit and Colorado were talking about Quincy, yes, beforehand. They couldn't match up on players. Well, you know, was that first round pick not on the table initially? Is that, I mean, you know, because that's all it took to get the deal done from Eiserman.
It's a good question. I mean, we don't know. We're not privy to those.
You know, was Colorado demanding an active roster player?
Maybe they were. And to be honest, I mean, I know that they're getting killed because the first round pick was exchanged. It will be the 30th overall pick. You know, if you said just Quincy for downdraft, I don't think anybody would, you know, put you through the ringer for it.
Yeah, and if you're Detroit, and
I like Quincy there better than like Downey. But I mean, come on, I mean. It's not a crazy substantial difference there.
No,
and Colorado's not close to contending. So,
and for Colorado, as you mentioned, they're easy to play against. They have a lot of young talent, and I mean, you don't want your young talent necessarily getting beat up. And so this way, you know, with Downey on your roster now, he's a guy who's not strictly a goon.
Right.
He can certainly play some minutes.
Yeah.
You know, he can probably play 12, 13 minutes a game.
You can play more than that.
Maybe. Okay. So he can play some minutes, and he's going to be there, and he's going to stand up for your young, talented players in case anybody tries to take any liberties with them.
And, guys, the defenseman on the Colorado Avalanche that they really like, and Adrian Dater wrote about this after the trade was made, was Stefan Elliott. He's a rookie defenseman, and he hasn't exactly torn up the league like Erik Karlsson has. He's only got 11 points, but he's a guy who, in his rookie season, who used to play for the Saskatoon Blades, who Colorado is very high on. And you've got Eric Johnson there, and even though Eric Johnson, you know, we're still waiting for him to live up to the first overall pick, you've got some talent there. So really a move that, when you evaluate trades, it's always risk-reward and who you compare the best players and all that. But when you factor in what everybody's getting, I think everybody got what they wanted here.
And I just got a text from Dave Manuk. He just said that the Tampa actually has 6 picks in the first 2 rounds.
Well, there you go. So, yeah. I mean,
I guess
everybody's. It seems like a move where there's a plan in place for why everybody made the move, which in a lot of trades, you can't necessarily say that. Hi, Brian Burke of the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Hey, By the way, you can make a strong argument, Richie, that Washington should be doing what Tampa's doing. Tampa's not that far behind Washington right now. Obviously, they're going to make a push. Maybe you'd argue that they have to go for it more where they're at right now. But look at what Washington has. Wouldn't it be nice to get rid of some of these guys that you know you're not going to have back as part of the long-term plans?
Washington's such a complex situation, though, Izzy. I mean, you have...
It's not a good complex.
No, it's not a good complex at all.
No,
we could spend a whole show breaking down the problems there.
Yeah, and I'm sure as the season progresses, we may very well end up doing that. Anyways, let's go to break. When we come back on the other side, Aaron Portsline from the Columbus Dispatch is going to join us. We're going to talk Jeff Carter, going to talk Rick Nash, going to talk the Columbus Blue Jackets. You're listening to Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.